is not a drill. This is not a drill. General quarters. General quarters. All hands on your battle stations.
Welcome to Midrats with Sal from Commander Salamander and Eagle One from Eagle Speak at Sea or Shore, your home for a discussion of national security issues and all things maritime. And welcome aboard, everybody. I am the aforementioned Sal, along with my ever-genial co-host, Eagle One of Eagle Speak. As a reminder, those are with us live. If you want to join with the small but distinguished group of people in the chat room, that's a great place. If you have some observations during the show you want to share, or if there's a question you would like for us to direct to our guest, if it doesn't look like we're heading that direction, we'll both be monitoring that during the course of the show, and we'll be glad to grab those good ideas and roll them in at some point in the next hour. But let's go ahead and get on with the show. Many of our audience have probably heard of the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell, otherwise known as CRIC. And it was established back in 2012 to provide junior leaders with a venue to identify and to rapidly field emerging technologies that they think are needed in the fleet. What we have on today for the full hour, we have three of the good folks from CRIC, and we're going to talk about where it came from, what are some of the projects they're working on, what is their charter, and what are some of the efforts they see going forward that will further their mission. And our guests are going to be Commander Ben Salazar, U.S. Navy. He is the current Director for Innovation at the Navy Warfare Development Command and over at the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell in Norfolk. Pardon me, I lost myself there for a second. And our second guest is returning guest, the other Ben, Ben Coleman, speechwriter for Admiral Gortney. And also working for CRIC is Lieutenant Jackie Quinlan. She's a supply officer working as an action officer there with the Naval Warfare Development Center with CRIC since September of last year. Ben, Jackie, and Ben, welcome to Midrats. And let me see if I can unmute your mic. My apologies for that. Let's try that again. Welcome to Midrats.
Thanks, Sal. Great to be here again.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Great thing about being live is it keeps you humble. You know, you forget a button or two and you lose your word, but that's okay. It's all uphill, downhill from here, one of the two. We'll figure it out as we go forward. Ken Salazar, let's start off with you just for perhaps some of our listeners who aren't familiar with the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell. If you could, just get a quick outline on the background since 2012 with CRIC and how it's evolved to where we have it today.
Well, again, thanks for having us on your show. I've been with Navy Warfare Development Command and relieved Captain Rich Henke in being the steward of the CRIC back in July, end of July, early August. And actually, the genesis, as you mentioned, of the CRIC was about a year prior to that. But basically what happened when the commander of NWDC, Terry Kraft, Terry Kraft then had gotten with the CNO, he said, hey, I want a group of disruptive thinkers, thinking outside of the Navy and outside of the normal lanes and looking for solutions for the Navy. Now, I will tell you, Ben Coleman here, who is now, again, Admiral Gortney's speechwriter, which much to my chagrin, because actually he left the CRIC, he was working at NWDC early. He left the CRIC early to, again, because we have really talented folks working in the CRIC that are members of the CRIC, and unfortunately, with talent like that, they get by name requested out of your organization. So we also have a previous member, Micah Murphy, got the name right, who had had several projects, and he ended up working for a senator as a member of his staff. For Senator McCain. So just to show you the caliber of folks, just an example of the caliber of folks that are involved with the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell. But Ben Coleman was here from almost the beginning here, and I'll let Ben tell a little bit about the genesis of the CRIC before I got there.
So, yeah, it's a great background, but when we first started, it was two of us, Chuma and myself, who were kind of picked to select other members who would be suitable first-generation CRIC members. And the idea was to give junior officers, junior enlisted personnel, the opportunity to take on projects and push forward technologies or ideas that maybe weren't getting play in the rest of the Navy, but that we thought were going to have an outsized impact. And to do that, we traveled around the country, visited innovative organizations, recruited folks from all different communities of the Navy to start interacting with each other and start figuring out how we could kind of take some of the trends that were shaping the world and apply them directly to the Naval Service. And after about 4 or 5 months of recruiting folks, we had a good cadre, about 12 people, and then the first real product review happened last spring in March. We kind of set forward with some of the money we had available to us and some of the networks that we had created pushing some of these projects forward.
Eagle One?
How fast is Rapid Innovation? When you guys brought this project up, what do you look at in terms of how fast the work goes?
That's a great question. I tell you, what we shoot for is between 18 to 24 months and a fairly humble budget. For this is from the time that which the project is proposed and it's approved, and it's there is some bureaucracy that goes with that, but it goes fairly quickly. And again, because when you have access with like these young folks have to senior leadership and to resources, there requires some level of staffing and some protocol that's involved with that. But we work through that, and we've had some pretty good successes, I think, along the way.
I know a part of the frustration must be with the fact that, when you put RAPID in front of, an organization as big as the Navy and a governmental organization, especially as big as the Navy, it's really hard to move things because there are established procedures. Everybody has their own little territory, and you have to go through certain wickets regardless of what you want to do. And I think a good example of that is where, when you and I met over at West in San Diego, some of the crew from the USS Benfold, and I think it was their navigator or their WEPS, one of the two, gave up an example of an idea that he came up with, because there's commercial software, kind of the 21st century celestial navigation, where, modify some existing technology, whereas old school, you thought you were pretty hot if you could, get within single digits of celestial, but modern computing gives us the ability to be just hyper-accurate with celestial in an environment where maybe you no longer own the electromagnetic spectrum, but you do, nobody owns the stars, so to speak. And he told an interesting story how it got to a certain point, and then it has to go into a normal process to develop something, whereas in a commercial enterprise, for instance, in my civilian life, if I wanted to develop an app, the only barrier to me having something within a few months is a few thousand dollars. How much luck have y'all had in a niche way of being able to take the good people and tough jobs trying to do the right thing, but they run against procedures and bureaucracy, of being able to nudge that here and there for perhaps some of the lower dollar entry point? Are all ideas eventually going to reach the same type of block that they have?
Well, I think it's important to understand that all CRIC projects are not necessarily going to be taken from soup to nuts. We are basically the ones putting it on a platter, saying this is what we think is a viable technology or viable option. We kind of demonstrate its capability, and then hopefully through that demonstration, a resource sponsor comes along and takes ownership of it. And I can only speak for my personal project working with additive manufacturing, but when we first took it on, there were numerous entities throughout the Navy using additive manufacturing, 3D printing, for various ends. We were the first ones to kind of bring it out to the fleet and the end user for the warfighter. But what we found is that we basically created an interest group of individuals and entities that were utilizing 3D printing. We created this ecosystem and grassroots groundswell that got the attention of the OpNav staff. And the CNO, a couple months ago, actually transitioned additive manufacturing to OpNav N4, which we think is a pretty good model for how CRIC projects should work. Is we kind of introduce the technology, we say we think this is going to have a transformative effect, we demonstrate it in some way, and then a higher level resource sponsor who can give more funding and oomph behind it will institutionalize it and hopefully take it forward.
Who selects the original projects you guys decided to devote your time on?
So each individual member either comes into the CRIC or through their visits to other, you know, civilian entities or military entities will focus on a project that they think is of interest to them. And from there, they develop a project proposal, and it goes, we work with ONR very closely to see if there's anything parallel, and if not, then we'll kind of go off on our own. But there's some mentors at NWDC, and there's a board that we go through of three admirals. It's N81, NWDC, and the ONR head. They kind of do an initial chop, and then once we decide on the projects we think are worthy and kind of fit them into the budget that we've been given, we propose them, the CNO signs off on them, and we go forward and try to execute on them.
One of the questions I have is kind of interesting. With an organization like this, you're really building, really your bread and butter is intellectual capital. It's the people you have, the ability for them to think in different ways and different ideas. And to get that intellectual capital, obviously in this line of work, people move on a lot. And this isn't just an organization that's full of naval officers. There are, I believe, Marines. We also have enlisted personnel. What is the selection process for somebody to be a member of CRIC, and how long is their tenure there?
I'll tell you, I'll take this one. You know, we're an organization that's coming up on 2 years old right now, and so one of the things I challenge our organization with is if something doesn't seem like it's working, you know, call the baby ugly early and adjust your efforts. And one of the things we're looking at with regards to your question is how we select folks and how we bring projects. But one of the, I saw a question here about what method we're using to reach out to fleet for problems. You know, it's not necessarily driven by what the fleet needs, you know, because there's a lot of examples within industry that talk about, you know, technology that was brought forth, but with not necessarily, you know, like the iPhone is brought, you know, the Ford and the automobile were examples of that. I think I may have talked around your question a little bit.
Well, I can answer more directly. So we've evolved the way that we've recruited and gotten CRIC members on board. So the first iteration with the first generation was literally word of mouth. The couple of us who started up, we knew some folks, both in the officer and enlisted ranks, who were kind of those, you know, outside-the-box thinkers.
Oh, my God.
Them on board. We had about a 50% attrition rate that first year, just the type of person who would be able to take extra time to execute projects. We formalized it last year and created an online application, tried to get the word out. I think there was an all-nav about, you know, the application that we had. But it was very unique in the way we did it. We didn't look at fit reps. We didn't look at superior officer recommendations. It was all based on the individual's ideas and what they had done to show that they were actually action-oriented and had taken an idea to fruition in the fleet. Now, this selection evolution may change this next summer. We have our next application. It'll probably be similar. You know, we'll have an online application. We'll have some criteria that we're going to evaluate on. And last year, we had 60 applicants for the 8 open slots. What we did was basically all of the applications in a blind way. We had 5 people grading them, and from the top 20, interviewed all of them for half an hour to determine if they were the right fit for our organization, and then gave them opportunity for engagement. But what we also did was those who didn't get selected for CRIC proper, we set up the CRIC-X, which is kind of an affiliate organization that creates this community of like-minded individuals who have these ideas. So even though you're not on the CRIC, you probably have some really good contributions to make to the organization as a whole. We wanted to create this local and national organization that would be a grassroots network where people could rely upon each other, cross-community, and just really build up this culture of intellectual curiosity and ideas.
Now, I would assume the C in CRIC is CNO, and he's not just there for the photo ops or to give the pay grade heft to it. What type of interface do you have with the CNO, and what type of charter has he given y'all, you know, verbally on some of your projects and some of the feedback you may have received?
Well, one thing that I know I'm told is that the CNO is intimately interested in anything that bears his name and title. as I think most people would. So he, we have, since the stand-up of the CRIC, we've met with him twice a year. And we're talking about meetings, you know, in excess of an hour. So not too many folks at this level get an audience with the Chief of Naval Operations for that long. And we do regular exchanges, again with his staff. The guidance, the steer he has given us is, as I mentioned before, is to not let the bureaucracy get in the way, and to try and work as much outside of the regular system within legal bounds, of course, as you possibly can. And I tell you, one of the things you need for an organization like this, an innovative or any innovation organization, is leadership advocacy, in which we have in spades. We still fight some challenges, but I tell you, these group of young officers and enlisted folks are incredibly motivated. They'll have no problem. They have no problem calling and talking to very, very senior folks within our organization. And of course, the fact when they say they're a member of the CNO's Rapid Innovation Cell does open some doors and hold folks' interest a little bit longer. But aside from that, these young women are incredibly articulate, well-read. They know their material. They're incredibly passionate about their projects, which I think is one of the things that also distinguishes these folks from other organizations where you compare it to, like, Feed the Fleet and those things like that. So because of the fact that our projects are, you know, we're funded our research development and evaluation budget projects, we don't have to conform with some of the acquisition rules that you normally would in terms of bidding and things. So without getting too far down that rabbit hole.
We did meet with the CNO last year, I think 14 of us, and pitched our projects, and he gave us the hominy-dominy to go forward and conquer on those. We'll do a similar engagement in a couple of weeks of April, I believe, where we will give him what we're working on and give him an update on where we are with the project. He has been supportive of what we're trying to pursue. We are creating the internal to us, the CRIC charter, with his commanders. And
When you guys are working on these projects, I mean, is this mostly technology driven? Is there a place in your program for people who complain about the way PSD works, or is it mostly technological solutions and innovations to the way the Navy could get better?
Predominantly technology. I mean, the CRIC is not just about projects. We have a lot of folks here that come along on our CRIC trips. That have acted as advisors to other organizations, if you will, to just kind of give them some tactical viewpoints on some of their issues. We took a trip up to Navy Undersea Warfare Command recently, and we had great interaction with the folks up there. And I think a lot of it has to do with networking and, you know, putting them in contact with folks that are working similar type issues and may have solutions to their problems. So that's incredibly invaluable.
I think you raised an absolutely critical point, Eagle One. Part of the way the Navy is set up and the way that our funding is set up, we almost have to exclusively execute technology-based problems. But I know, talking to the members of the CRIC, you know, they're interested in technology, but they want to solve a lot of the more problems. So a lot of our discussions internal have to do with personnel detailing and the career process, things like RAD, all these organizations that are trying to make sailors' lives better. And we had a couple of projects in the hopper to address some of these personnel issues. Unfortunately, they didn't really meet muster because those are so difficult to address. But I can tell you from my vantage, we think those are the ones that are really going to make a difference in the 21st century. The widget, yeah, we'll get that. But for us at the deck plate, it's all about personnel policy, interaction with our students, and how we can affect.
We lost you there for a minute. I wanted to, you know, the old cliche that amateurs study tactics, but the professionals study logistics, so to speak. You know, we speak of technology, we speak of innovation and ideas coming into the fleet. You know, we're thinking about our major warfare areas. But, you know, Jackie, you're a supply officer. You did a tour on the Fort McHenry, and now you're over at CRIC. But obviously, whether you're looking at expediting parts via the Navy way or expediting parts via DHL. You know, there's a lot of thing in industry on logistics and support that really could probably use a little bit of modernization, some good ideas. How much, whether it's from, you know, the supply corps, the medical community, maybe the civil engineering corps, the other non-traditional warfare areas, how are those topic areas being addressed by CRIC, or is that one of your growth areas for the future?
That's a good question. It's sort of both right now, working with Ben and the additive manufacturing. You know, he had mentioned that Ford had been told pick it up and create a POANM for basically for the fleet. And what I'm doing right now in the office is trying to establish a network between the, you know, West Coast, East Coast, and the satellite areas that have 3D printers currently up and running. Right now, I have West Coast. Okay, the latest one was the Whidbey Island, and they needed us to come up with a part that can pretty much adapt sound-powered box to the current mount.
Turn it off. Your father's on a call.
On the bulkhead. And therefore cutting out hours and perhaps days of man hours that the ship would need to dedicate in order to have the new parts replaced. So something like that would definitely change how the supply chain works and is managed fleet-wide. Are you there?
You guys still there? We hear the talking in the background, but it's not our line.
Well, I rebooted myself to make sure it wasn't me. So if it's anybody, it's Sal or the magic of Skype. One of the questions I had was I listened to one of the CRIC podcasts on your work with some of the scientists at the SPAWARS, and what kind of interface do you all have with people like that who are providing service to the fleet and to the warfighters, and what kind of connections has CRIC helped make along those lines?
Well, I'll tell you, we have not really an honorary member, but Dr. Josh Quivley. He's an electrical engineer over there at SPAWAR Pacific, and he's been with us, for a year now, at least for a year. You know, he's gone on our trips. He is intimately involved with one of the other members' projects, Josh Steinman, in developing apps for fleet use for Google Glass. And the apps that they're looking at are some 3M type maintenance apps that would free up a sailor's both of his hands. They can have, you know, the PMS card there up in the Google Glass display, and perhaps even order parts while they're there. You know, the imagination only limits what you can do with that sort of thing. Also, developing a kind of a situational awareness type app, and they're actually looking to try and demo this capability on the USS Benfold, of which you mentioned before, that Dave Nobles of the Project Athena, the weapons officer there, is involved. As a matter of fact, Dave Nobles is a CRIC member, and he and his Gator are working on a project for us for this next round with what you talked about with the cosmic the stellar navigation.
One of the things that we see in a lot of the CRIC members is there is a significant divide between the warfighter and the technologist. A lot of the warfighters have never spent time in a lab for obvious reasons, and a lot of the scientists, because they've been busy working on projects, have been removed from the fleet because of their job requirements. What we're trying to do is bridge that gap. And Josh Quivley at SPAWAR, when he first heard about the CRIC, we engaged with him when we went to San Diego, and he immediately latched onto the project and created an internal CRIC-like organization at SPAWAR to get young engineers to tie directly into the fleet and figure out how they can help us. So the test pilot ship for that was the USS Benfold, where Dave Noble basically invited a bunch of engineers over to the ship to see what they do on a day-to-day basis. Nothing complex, just to see how sailors interact with technology and interact with their use cases, which was a great help to those engineers because they could finally see what they were building and how it was being used in real ways. And it also allowed for the sailors to go and visit the technologists in their lab and see what they have to go through to get a product that they think would be useful into their hands. So we really want to break down these barriers and have a lot of collaboration grow from our engagements with them.
Yeah, I used to work experimentation a number of years ago, and a perfect example of that, the engineers had developed a portable communications suite for shipboard use. Well, they went to bring it on board a ship, and the case that they had, it would not fit through the hatches, through the doorways. And so, again, because these engineers had never been shipboard, didn't understand the limitations of moving things from, on board a ship. I mean, just something very basic like that.
Yeah, you can only fit so many things in the helo hangar. They can't fit it through the bulkhead. That's an issue. One thing I wanted to bring up, because I think it kind of folds into to the conversation we just had, is there is the ongoing discussion about the Navy and what percentage of its officers need to be science, technology, math, engineering majors, the STEM major routine. And there's an ongoing discussion about the importance of having an intellectual diversity, to have people with different academic backgrounds to help look at things differently. And there is a fear by those of the liberal arts background that engineers tend not to be that broad-minded. And then there's a concern from the engineering and technology side of the house that your poets, your English majors, and your history majors can't follow a STEAM line to save their life. Now, inside of CRIC, have you looked at the academic backgrounds of the people that are contributing in ideas, and do you really see a difference between the two, or a different ways of looking at projects depending upon what somebody's background is?
I think that diversity of background is critical. We haven't explicitly tried to, get 10 liberal arts majors and, 10 STEM majors. But I think intellectual curiosity is intellectual curiosity. You know, I look at the best and most successful projects we've had and the project leads, and they've had, they've been of all types of backgrounds. I know myself, I was a poli-sci major, but I'm working on an additive manufacturing project. One of our other CRIC members was an engineer, but went to China to study Chinese for 2 years, was a journalist over there, did computer science from a Chinese university, and is a writer in his spare time. Another one is a human intel guy who is a poli-sci major, but is enamored of Google Glass, and so he elected to go with that route. I think that the right type of person is more important than what they study, and those who are going to be, intellectually curious and look beyond their little stovepipes are the ones we're looking for. So on our application, one of the questions we had was, what's the last book you read, and what impact did it have on your life to change your view of the world? And we got an incredible variety of answers. Some were technical, some were non-technical. But it showed to us that the people, regardless of what they had studied in college, were willing to challenge their assumptions and look at new ways of doing things. I think that should be the focus, not necessarily what you studied or not.
If you all were to pick, as I gather, there may be 15 different CRIC projects being played around with it in a minute, but if you were to pick like five top ones that the fleet would be most interested in right now, what would that five be?
Our current project?
Sure. What do you think, Jackie?
Anything that answers the issues that we're having out in Asia, stuff that addresses what's going on in the Pacific, that's always a hot topic.
Unfortunately, we can't talk about some of that here.
Can't get into too much detail, of course.
That's not fair.
The ones we can, I'd say 3D printing is probably number one. I'd say Google Glass is number two. I'd say SURF, which is an underwater optical fiber thing, is probably number three. There's some to do with energy conservation on ships with LED lighting, and then just general things to do with Wi-Fi technology on ships. And while a lot of that, the Wi-Fi thing isn't necessarily a project we're pursuing, it's a discussion we've had that I think a lot of sailors have had, especially coming out of the Reducing Administrative Distractions discussion about consolidating networks, consolidating websites, and making things more user-friendly. We've done a lot with augmented reality, looking at how do you superimpose, graphical layers over existing infrastructure to get more information via iPads and other things like that. But those at the top of my head, I think, would be the most interesting.
Well, I have a feeling that Coleman thinks that additive manufacturing is number one because he worked the way that worked on it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think Ben has said additive manufacturing five or six times so far this year.
I'm a good salesman. What can I say?
That's a fact. The what was the phrase that everybody was using that was giving me a migraine? Ideation. Ideas are great. Trying to bring in new ideas and to make them happen is great. Trying to operationalize emerging technology is important because it makes sailors' life easier, and push comes to shove, it may actually save some lives. But you also need the unsexy but boring stuff. That's institutionalizing the ability to take an idea and get it to the fleet and then have it to have life beyond the POM cycle. And had an interesting conversation with a U.S. Coast Guard captain who was very interested in what Crick was doing, what happened on the USS Benfold, because they have something very similar in the Coast Guard. And he said something very interesting to me. He said that, you know, what he's trying to do at the Coast Guard is they have this institutionalized, they have this structure, but he really wasn't comfortable that he had the right concept, the right ideas. And one of the things that he saw from the outside at the Navy is that the Navy seems to have the right people there with good ideas and some good projects going. He was concerned that there wasn't a bureaucratic structure in place to have it move beyond, and I'll credit him with this phrase, personality-based pockets of innovation. Is Crick something that's going to be able to, if not, you know, the hub of the wheel, but maybe one of the significant support spokes, to be able to make sure that we don't have something that goes for a few years that becomes personality-based pockets of innovation, but something that could be self-sustaining. So, you know, Admiral Ben Coleman a decade and a half ago could say, I used to do that over there. Is that something that's been looked at, and you feel comfortable that we might be able to sustain it so that it's something that is around a few years now, but doesn't lose its mission and its ability to be intellectually flexible as well?
I tell you, that's a point of discussion almost daily within our offices. And again, what happens to the Crick after, you know, to the 2016 when Admiral Greenert moves on, if he does move on? We're looking to build again something sustainable, not just a flash in the pan. And you talked a little bit about you mentioned about, you know, hey, about the recruiting of Cricksters. One of the things that's different, I think, about what we try to bring folks on board is these folks have mentioned that doing is the new innovation. The large amount of the folks that we try to bring in have that entrepreneurial spirit about them. In my office, I have to rein them in as opposed to push them along on their projects or their ideas, which is great. Which is absolutely wonderful. Now, by necessity, because of the things that we do, and we are dealing with money and budgets, you know, you have to do some, make sure that folks know about contracting laws, how to deal with defense contractors and ethics and all this. They know, because we are dealing with fairly junior folks within the service, and I didn't even learn about those things until about a decade ago in my career, and didn't, you know, before I started working with civilians within the defense industry. So that's, if you don't understand some of the nuances of that, you can you know, get yourself in trouble. So those are just like one of my responsibilities, I think, is making sure that the folks you know, paint within the lines within those legal and ethical circles. But really, what it comes down to, the perfect Crickster, the rock star Crick member, is someone has an idea that is, you know, that is feasible and that has a passion for it. And goes out and finds out and does all their homework and wants to push that product along, project along, I should say.
I think there's two elements. The first is you absolutely have to have bureaucratic and high-level leadership buy-in. And the second part is that we're giving people permission at the junior level to take action on ideas that they have. And to the first point, the Crick, along with the rest of the military innovation movement, is really trying to create a grassroots generation of individuals such that regardless of formal organization, in 10, 15, 20 years' time, when they are those senior leaders, they will have a basis in understanding how the world is shaped by technology and innovation and what they can do to foster it in their subordinates and maybe bring up some of these people to do that in the future. But look at a guy like Dave Nobles, who on the Benfold, without the Crick in existence, created the Athena project out of thin air and got great ideas from his sailors. We don't want the CRIC to be like so inclusive that only the CRIC gets to do projects. We want to give sailors permission to say, if you have a good idea, go and execute on it. Get leadership buy-in, get your ship to support you, try to be creative in getting funding, create projects that don't necessarily need funding, but think for yourselves. You know, take action on something that you can do as a leader right now to make a difference in the lives of those sailors. And I think the CRIC is more than just one entity. It's a holistic look at how we develop our leaders and what we want to have them pull from their subordinates when they're superior officers.
When one of the things that was talked about earlier was kind of an interface with or problems potentially of dealing with outside vendors or contractors and stuff. How does CRIC does it have any interface with companies that want to provide services to the Navy? And if so, what kind of interface do you all have?
So if you've got a particular project that may be of benefit to from industry, you're certainly able to go out and kind of pick their brains on it. Obviously, with you know the legal and contracting requirements on that, we do industry visits where we go to innovative parts of the country and visit with them. A lot of those connections are made via personal networks. But also, if an entity is interested, like they have an innovation cell within you know Google, for instance, and they invite us to come. If we have time and ability, we will go visit them, regardless of who they are. We have a very wide net and aperture as to who we want to interact with. And it's not so much to, you know, buy a product from them or to sell them something of our own, but to learn about their processes and see how we might be able to bring some of those things back to what we're doing and institute those within our organization as a whole. But as we get to the contracting side, you know, we typically have to try to work with people like ONR and other established entities with contracts to help us navigate those very challenging legal and contracting requirements.
One other thing on the intellectual building I wanted to touch on is if you want to get people who are relatively young and in the Navy, that's anybody under 35 or under 30, I think, to be able to think and to get ideas and try to implement it, you know, you can kind of build some of that organically, but you also need to be exposed to a few things. And there are some projects in the Navy that have been around for a long time. We're talking about various fellowship programs, advanced education to get PhDs. But, you know, Millington frowns on that. Selection boards frown on that, where you take a front-running JO and he goes off and does one of these fellowship programs, or even depending upon what community he's with, maybe he does a tour with another Navy. Maybe he goes and gets his PhD before he even you know makes 04. That non-competitive fit rep can just spike some very talented officers early on in their career, and it's almost as if we're schizophrenic, and we want the byproduct of what exposing some people who are interested in looking what industry does for a year and a half or so, wants to go off and see how the Royal Navy does their acquisitions, wants to go off and work for, you know, a supply officer, go work for DHL out of Dubai, or if you have somebody who wants to go get their PhD in applied manufacturing, what has that been you've been talking about? But then they go in front of a selection board, and they're lucky if they make it past 05 when you compare them to people who did the traditional path. What type of conversation have we had in the larger Navy about looking at that rather rigid but very real structure that we have coming out of Millington and find a way to incentivize it? So a strong-running JO who is – he has some ambition, can't do both things, know that, okay, I can do this, but I can still, down the road, have the option of being able to progress professionally. Have y'all looked at that as well in the larger sense of bringing innovation and different ideas into the Navy?
You know, that's an incredibly good question. And anecdotally, I would say that the Navy has probably been the worst service when it comes to that. I'd say there's some pros and cons to us being so joint over the last decade or so. I'm not going to dwell on the cons, but I think one of the things that are going to be a pros is that our sister services do value professional education, you know, the Air Force and the Army specifically, and I think the Marine Corps as well. They spend it's programmed within their career path to go on to different education paths, and you know, and especially within the Air Force. I think you'll start to see that more in the Navy, hopefully. You know, we tend to be very, what I call, you know, platform-centric. You know, it requires a lot of technical expertise to run our machines, our ships, our aircraft. But I would argue that, at least as far as our CRIC members go, and you can say that, you know, hey, we picked rock stars to begin with, we have a pretty good track record of our folks still being fairly competitive, very competitive within their careers. Like Ben Coleman here, again, by name request from by Admiral Gortney to go be a speechwriter. That's no small small achievement, definitely something you want to keep in your scrapbook. Micah Murphy going to work for Senator McCain over there. I'm guessing that their careers are not going to be hurt by doing all these intellectual pursuits and, you know, talking with Google X and working on additive manufacturing, something that keeps, you know, like guys like Ben Coleman out of the cockpit.
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit. I think what you've, Sal, what you raised is a critical element that has consumed a lot of time in CRIC discussions. And I think if you look at the recent Navy retention white paper that came out, that was one of those things that was highlighted extensively. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I'm seriously considering getting out of the Navy, is I don't see an opportunity for myself to pursue the things I want to do in addition to the requirements the Navy has me doing, which are, in a lot of ways, absolutely necessary for career progression. But there's no flexibility to go outside of the golden path and come back on. And that's probably there for good reason, but it's frustrating for someone like myself who wants to go explore those other options while still potentially having an impact on the inside. We at our level have a very difficult time of making that, getting those changes forward. But again, the paper that Commander Snodgrass put forward in the past week that's literally gone viral across the Navy, I think is touching on those very issues that you brought up. And it's something we have to face because, let's be honest, the millennial generation is different than others in the perception that they have of a 20 or 30 year career. A lot of us want the opportunity or ability to move in and out of certain career paths or explore other options. And we're running the Navy, in my view, is an industrial age organization that's running headlong as information age reality and having a very difficult time adapting to the way that our society is changing right now.
Well, as a really old guy, it's hard for me to disagree with you because it's absolutely true. It was true when I was a young ensign, and it's true today for the young ensign who's my son. So, and that raises the issue. How much difficulty you all have selling technology to some of these senior-level people about, you know, this works better and will help our guys who are already technologically savvy do a better job for the Navy?
It's hard, but it varies. I mean, some are very technologically savvy. And, you know, I know senior officers personally who are frustrated at the lack of movement on some new technologies. That said, there's good reason why we go slow on some of these technologies, like Wi-Fi on ships. That'd be awesome. But there are significant security concerns that are raised by that. I don't know. It's a tough issue. I think every generation faces how do you integrate acquisitions and, you know, cutting-edge technology on infrastructure that's decades old and takes decades to create. It's not an easy problem.
One thing I think we owe the listeners here, because you know it really well, I kind of know it, and anybody that saw the video that was captured over at UNSI, they know it as well. But we've talked a couple of times about our friend over at the USS Benfold. In the panel, the outgoing skipper of the Benfold and some of his team came up and talked about Project Athena. If we could just back up a little bit and talk in broad terms what Project Athena was and how that kind of dovetails with some of the background themes that you have at CRIC.
Yeah, so I'll start by saying that if you guys haven't heard, the Benfold actually won the Battle E for the West Coast destroyers, which I think shows that innovation and creative leadership is valued by the Navy. So I think Commander Rich LeBron and his team and Dave Nobles certainly deserve a lot of credit for that. But literally, Dave saw an opportunity to pull from the best that his sailors were offering and give them time and resources to make their dreams a reality. And he's hosted, I think, four or five different Athena events. They spend a day. They go or basically in the month beforehand. You're given, I think, like a couple hours of your own time to come up with an idea. You pitch it at a brewery in the San Diego area for an afternoon, and the best idea gets command funding and command time to execute on that idea. And the voting takes place amongst all the assembled crew and the civilians. And one of the cool things I saw last time around was some of the networks they've created from the Disruptive Thinkers group there into the entrepreneur community actually came to Athena, spoke, and were giving sailors opportunities for networking jobs and for other things, both on the inside and outside, that have really kind of raised the profile of the Benfold there to close that civil-military gap and kind of create more of an ecosystem of true civil-military interaction there while promoting innovation at the Navy and abroad.
Yeah, I thought I thought one of the interesting items there, you mentioned it gets naval funding, but I thought one of the interesting comments they made, they were talking about one of their, you can tell I have kids, one of the field trips they took was Navy didn't pay a penny for it. The officers enlisted who went on it, they paid for their own pocket. They didn't get per diem. They didn't get reimbursed for travel expenses, none of that. They just had permissive, no-cost TDY to head off for a day to go make their ship better. And I think that was a story that probably should be told more by the people that were there because that would have people look at what they're doing as times get tight. If you want to make your ship better, sometimes you have to accept the fact you're not going to get per diem to do it. Eagle One, over to you.
Yeah, I was going to talk. I wanted to ask again about this CRIC-X. I mean, how similar is that to what the Athena project is doing?
Well, in a broader general scope, CRIC-X, we're trying to set up networking opportunities for folks who are on the fleet, as well as industry and other government offices, such as ONR, SPAWAR. We have the Athena guys that sometimes attend, and it's really about networking and having the folks who have ideas, such as Daryl Dipsy, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of him. He's in the CRIC-X, and he actually has a pretty mature project called the EVA app. I'm sure he's seen it. He had an interview on Fox News. He's one of our more enterprising CRIC-Xers who had this idea, said, hey, this can really impact the fleet, and without funding from the CRIC or anyone, went out and made it happen. We want to have those kind of opportunities for everyone who is interested in having a project or has an idea but doesn't have necessarily the resources or the networking. They can come to the CRIC-X and get that network and have that opportunity.
Well, I think CRIC-X and Athena have worked very well together, and CRIC-X basically allowed Athena to grow. So I know because of the engagements we have on our listserv on CRIC-X and hearing about what Dave's doing with Athena, the folks at NIOC Maryland actually want to set up an internal CRIC-X for 10th Fleet. Internal Athena project for 10th Fleet. So because of the network we've created, if someone has a great idea in one place, they can easily transmit that to other enterprising junior officers and enlisted personnel in another place and have them take that idea on board and grow it. So it's really this organic network that's undirected, that's taking good ideas, taking their own time and effort, and making it happen. And Sal, just to kind of pile onto one of the points you were making, is I see this current generation of individuals so passionate about the military, even if they disagree with it, they take time and resources that they have and devote them to solving problems. And I think that, I'm going to do a pitch for death here, but back in October, we had over 100 folks show up in the middle of sequestration taking leave and on their own dime to talk about military innovation concepts and ideas and how they could best improve their platoon, their ship, their squadron, whatever, because they wanted to do that. And we are seeing this passion come about. We have to find a way to harness, and I think CRIC and CRIC-X is one way that we are doing that.
Well, occasionally I like to play Miss Mary Dark Cloud, so I wanted to take an opportunity because anybody who reviewed my career will know that many times in life you learn from your mistakes and your wrong steps and your errors. And I'm sure at some point along the line there have been some failures, some less than optimal ideas that you've pursued that haven't quite clicked outright. What are some of the things that y'all ambitiously stepped forward with that didn't quite turn out the way you wanted to? And as a team or as an organization, how did y'all communicate that failure and respond to it amongst yourselves?
Well, I mean, there have been a couple projects that didn't really get off the ground. One was to use UAVs as remote delivery platforms. And part of that was just the person we selected to run that program was overcome with other events and other things that he had to do in his day job. And part of the problem, you know, we had about a 50% attrition rate in terms of who was on the CRIC originally. So getting us to focus on who the right people are, who can devote the resource, and who's passionate enough to execute those projects, I think, is our biggest challenge. I mean, personnel issues affect us just as they do everybody else. Another challenge we've had is, again, going back to Micah Murphy, got pulled to go work for Senator McCain. He couldn't work on his SURF project, so that left a huge gap into, you know, who was going to take that project over. And I don't think we have a good process in place for taking an idea that's, you know, 90% there, and the person that was running it has to leave for whatever reason. It kind of falls by the wayside. A lot of these, as you mentioned, are personality-driven, and we have to find a way to formalize the system, to bring in a lot more stakeholders who will buy in earlier and can basically seamlessly pick these up and transition these to, you know, a tangible outcome for the sailor. I think some of our strategic communications has been lacking. A lot of people don't know what the CRIC is. They're confused about what it is. We've tried blogging. We've tried internal online discussion forums. We've had about 3 or 4 failures there. Ended up just going straight to email because that's what worked. But we're an interim organization, and we have a lot of work to do. We don't have a formal charter that really defines who we are, where we want to be. So we're learning a lot along the way.
Ben Briggs, I know the other project, we're looking to use some Intel software to help with the detailing process. Of course, that ended up being proprietary, and that didn't get very far. That's another project which unfortunately would have some great potential. I think we want to try and skin that cat again in the future. But as Ben had mentioned, a big part of the success of these projects is the passion of the person behind them. One thing that we haven't discussed too much here is, with the exception of the few folks that work at NWDC full-time, of course, they have, you know, the taskers that I drive and all the regular administrative burden of working in an organization like that. The rest of the CRIC, the other, 12-some-odd folks there that are active members, this is a part-time job for them. This is what they do aside from their regular day job, which why we try generally not to select folks on sea duty because of the demands that sea duty puts upon you. So this is things they do on their off time, on their free time, on the weekends, and quite frankly, there's a lot of it consumes quite a bit of their bandwidth to do this. And some folks have more bandwidth than others. Most of the folks in the CRIC have an incredible amount of bandwidth, and also have that passion. So. And you learn things about, you know, moving money in the Navy, about how to do statements of work and how to do all those sorts of things. And it takes time, and it takes a lot of energy. But what I tell our folks is that, hey, you have this incredible opportunity with advocacy from the highest levels of the Navy and access to some resources, you know, monetary and otherwise. And much will be asked of you in your off time. So if you're not up for it, and those longer hours and some of the frustration that comes along with it, no good thing comes at a low price at an easy gain. So,
well, I think that's a great point, in that a lot of the crazy ideators and the guys who like to, you know, tinker and build stuff hate paperwork, and I'm one of those guys. Like, I love having big ideas, but when it comes to writing the project plan and writing off the funding documents, like, I want to gouge my eyeballs out, and I've failed in that regard in a lot of ways. Fortunately, I've had a guy by the name of Paul Thayer who's picked up my slack at NWDC, but that's something we're not good at. We have this great idea, we want to implement it, but one, we're not patient, don't understand the bureaucracy, but just aren't willing to put up with the stuff that we have to do sometimes. So.
Yeah, and that raises another question. I know in a lot of the private enterprise I've been involved in, one of the things you want to do is when you start a project like CRIC is to come forward with a major success, and let's say your 3D printing was that kind of success. Do you use that as a building block, or can you use that as a building block in discussing what you all are up to with people you're trying to sell the program to?
Absolutely, and I think as we have more successes and as the group matures, our value proposition is going to be the successes we've had. Now, internally, we think, much like you guys, that failure is almost a better determination of what you're learning and how to evolve. But, you know, if you want to be a continued organization in the Navy, you have to prove successes. And I think AM and one of the other projects that's going on right now, they are the successes. They have been transitioned to large stakeholders. They are collecting, you know, massive amounts of Navy funding as well as, you know, collective resources to execute this on a broad scale. So hopefully we'll have more of those.
The it's interesting to look at innovation and new ideas and change, but obviously that's been going on for as long as, you know, somebody's put an oar in the water, so to speak. But one of my favorite periods of time in the Navy when it comes to innovation and in many ways getting it right was the interwar period between World War I and World War II, where you had the naval treaties severely restricted from the outside, at least what we could do, because we followed our treaties. You had the Great Depression that was present throughout much of that period. And, you know, here we are, we find ourselves in 2014. We're in year five of what some people call the Great Recession, just, you know, suboptimal economic growth. We have huge budget challenges in general as a nation, but specifically as the military part of that, whether we have sequestration or not, it's going to be a challenge, especially when you look at the recapitalization that's going to be required here in less than a decade. And you also have one of Eagle One's favorite topics that we've talked about a fair bit on the show here, that is present-day sea blindness, where after a decade plus of basic land-based war, it's hard to tell the story and the importance of the Navy. So with that type of long intro, in times of external stress and a diminished resource, it's actually a great opportunity for innovation, for being able to break the adhesions in the old paths. Have you seen an appreciation of the fact that because of these external stresses, the way that we have done things is not going to be able to get us to where we need to be as a Navy, and perhaps CRIC or some of the concepts that you're trying to imbue, especially with the junior leadership, might be one of the ways that we can take that external stress and make it a positive, just like three generations ago they did between the First and the Second World War?
I think the observations that you wanted right in terms of the Navy kind of keeping getting their eye off the ball in terms of maritime strategy is absolutely right because of where our efforts have been over the last decade. But one thing with regards to innovation, I think it was refreshing. So if you've looked at the QDR that was released recently, there's a little section there to talk specifically about innovation, and I'm gonna read just a quick section of it here.
Please do.
What's that?
Please do.
I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah. Please.
So, across the three pillars of the defense strategy, the department is committed to finding creative, effective, and efficient ways to achieve our goals and in making hard strategic choices. Innovation within our own department and our interagency international partnerships is a central line of effort. Infusing a culture of innovation, and I think that's important, a culture of innovation, and adaptability that yields tangible results into an organization as large as the Department of Defense is by necessity a long-term incremental undertaking. I want to stop there for a second. I mean, it just made my heart warm to see that they understood that you're talking about generational changes here in terms of how the organization thinks. The culture eats strategy for breakfast, and I say innovation strategy for breakfast. We are a very large, a very traditionally rooted organization, and it is tough to change that mindset. We went into a meeting a few months ago with an organization trying to bring some of their practices a little bit more current with some of the things we're using crowdsourcing. And one of the first things that the commander of that particular unit, I won't call them out here, said when they sat down with our folks is, I'm not a big fan of innovation. So that kind of set the tone for the rest of the meeting. So hopefully that's going to be changing here in a little while. Anyways, so continue here. So we will actively seek innovation approaches to how we fight, how we posture our force, and how we leverage our asymmetric strengths and technological advantages. Innovation is paramount given the increasingly complex warfighting environment we expect to encounter. So that's out of the recently released QDR.
Well, that's a challenge for the future. Guys, we've managed to run through a pretty quick hour here, and I use the guys generically. Pardon me.
No offense.
Jackie, so I apologize. Is there something we can be looking more information we're going to be looking for from CRIC in the immediate future? You guys got articles coming out, additional things we can point our listeners to?
Well, actually, yes, there is. We are utilizing a e-newsletter, so if I can get your email somehow through the CRIC X or the Google Groups website, that'd be great. I could distro it out. It's going to be covering everything from our podcast to articles. As you know, ET1 Anderson puts out the podcast pretty frequently when he has the time. I know he's very busy. Articles, links to other groups, what's going on with Athena, what's going on at ONR, as well as DefX and in-house with our Brightworks, which used to be Collab Lab. You know, it's pretty much a free-for-all of information of innovation and the culture that we're trying to spread and also trying to link people together. So that should be coming out shortly, hopefully at the end of March.
Well, we look forward to it. And for those that joined us late, our guests this hour have been Commander Ben Salazar, Lieutenant Jackie Quinsland, and also Lieutenant Ben Coleman with a return visit to Midrats, and Ben, Jackie, and Ben, thank you very much for taking time this Sunday afternoon to come join us. I've really enjoyed the conversation this hour.
We appreciate it. Thanks,
sir. Thanks, Al. Pleasure is ours.
Perfect, and thank you very much for those that are joining us live or on the archive, and please join us again next week for another live edition of Midrats. Until then, have a great Navy Day. Cheers.
Piccadilly.